my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Going over to Tyson Jacks. Now, time out. Ricky on the board. SP futures up 12. NASDAQ futures up 5. We'll see if that holds. We've tried to do that just about every morning, and then some knave comes in and pulls the rug out from under. What do you think of that, Ricky? Pulls the rug right out from under. Yesterday, the NVIDIA closed at 119.88, down like, I don't know, $11, but it was during the show in the morning, it was up 6 or 5 after the earnings, and everybody thought the earnings were great, and their chairman, who always comes out and is a big cheerleader for the place, which is what chairmans do, somehow it got a turnaround, and the turnaround was, I'm going to say $15, $15 times 225 billion shares outstanding. That's more money than Kevin's got, for God's sake. We have Kevin?
You have Kevin.
That's more scratching.
That sound of the rug getting pulled out again. I thought that was a great sound effect.
Pulled right out. Get pulled out.
I'm pretty sure it sounds just like that. I don't know. Does it sound like that in cartoons?
Probably. So there I was last night, minding my own business.
As usual.
Yeah, and I slunk downstairs with the hope of maybe getting the Irish Girls on the ACC network, since I don't have it. And they I don't know, they were kind of busy, so they didn't really get a chance. But I was watching the score, unfortunately. But I was watching UCLA and some other couple good teams. And fortunately or unfortunately, our group of guys that meet a couple nights a week has been sort of invaded by a couple of younger guys. Now, normally, you would say that... is a good thing, Kevin. Obviously, you deal with a lot of young people, and I like to hang around young people as well, my nephews and so forth, nieces. Sometimes the intellectual gap is pretty wide. Is that a fair statement?
You're going full grumpy old man on me here.
Well, I'm going to take you right with me here in a second. Matter of fact, probably more so. If you were there, it might have turned into a brawl, but... of course, the question comes up.
I'm a peace-loving fellow.
I know. The question comes up, what the hell are you doing watching girls' basketball? We have a good team. The people are very likable, and it's good basketball. It's kind of fun to watch. Oh, man, they can't even stuff. Okay. You know, like, guys, where do we go with this? And then I said, do you have any idea how successful some of these ladies are in some of these teams? Yeah, what are you talking about, Chief? What are you off your rocker tonight? And I'm going, do you have any idea what some of the deals and so forth these girls are getting? Because they stay in school 4 years, mostly, or three. They develop a name for themselves. They behave themselves. They're attractive. They can speak. They're people somebody wants to represent their company. I mean, why would anybody want to do that? They can't even stop. I'm saying, Kevin, what am I doing here?
Well, yeah, okay. So that's pretty meat-headed. I have to concede that, yeah.
I mean, don't you get it? That they're a much better... I don't want to generalize, but in general, these ladies, from the lady from Southern Cal to Caitlin Clark to a couple of girls in the Notre Dame team, and who's the lady from... African-American girl from down... that's doing State Farm or something? They all are you know their name because they play for 4 years. They're attractive. They can talk. They're people you want representing your product. Don't people get this? How is this lost on somebody who's like 30 years old?
It's hard to say.
I mean, some of
Well, people look. I get the aversion to women's sports in many cases. One of the problems that, you know, I think basketball has it. I think not so much tennis, because actually in many ways women's tennis is better to watch just because they have longer volleys. But when you start looking at the difference in size, strength, explosiveness, you know, all those kinds of things, that, you know, if you stack a man and a woman who are the same size next to each other, the man is going to have 15 to 20% more muscle mass, and that's going to translate into a lot of athleticism that doesn't exist in the other sport. That doesn't mean they're not athletic, and so it gets to be difficult when you try to stack one sport, you know, compare one sport to the other. And sure, if you like the speed, if you like the aerial game of the NBA, cool, I get that. And you know, I actually think the NBA has gotten kind of sucky over the last few years.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
But, you know, if you prefer that, I understand it. You know, that when we're talking about, you know, 6'4" as a center in women's basketball, and it's a point guard in men's, I understand all of that. And so, if you don't like it, but to say you can't even dunk the ball, geez, you know, that's showing that I don't really know basketball. That's just another way of saying I don't know basketball, because there are so many other skills involved in the game.
Well, it's like when you when we played softball and other games, you did as best you could for what you had available. When I played handball, I was a pretty solid B, and if I got in a tournament and made it to the top four or something, I'd done good, man, because I wasn't these other guys who were totally ambidextrous or all that other stuff. In a softball league, we always wanted to be in a league where if you played really well, you won, and if you didn't, maybe you didn't win, and maybe you got your ass kicked the next time you tried a little harder. The idea of playing in the Jerry's Kids League so you won every game and tell everybody you won, that never appealed to me. But I think the competitive nature of sport, so the women are 20% less muscular, and it doesn't mean it's not incredible basketball. I mean, you watch these ladies play golf.
That's my view of it too, Tom.
Well, I mean, you look at these ladies that play golf. I'm going to say they get at least as much out of their ability as the guys do. I mean, you look at their swing; it's the same every single time. I mean, are they gonna beat Rory McIlroy in a driving contest? We know the answer to that is no, but that doesn't mean you can't look at it and say, "Wow, I wish I had a swing like that." Right?
And I think that's it. Is you're looking at, you know, is sport being played very well at a very high level of competition? And the answer to that is yes, it is, and that's why, you know, that's why I like it. Is it entertaining? Is it, you know, is it all of those things? So. If someone wants to say I don't like it, but you know, there's a difference between saying I don't like it or I prefer something else, and boy, does that suck. And to say that sucks is just uninformed.
Well, I mean, I think necessarily a need if people are going to really root for somebody. And by the way, if you're a fan now, it's cost you like a real lot of dough. So, I mean, if you're going to be season ticket holders, which I used to be for the Cubs. I mean, we're talking massive amounts of money. And we're talking 81 games at, you know, four seats times $80 a ticket. That's in the upper deck or something. We're talking, you know, what's that, 24 grand? I mean, that's a real number.
That's a number, yeah.
So, I mean, you like...
Yeah, whereas I spend $150 per seat for season tickets for the women's.
Yeah, well, but you like to, and this is part of human nature, I really don't want to spend 24 grand to walk out to, you know, to... Who's the guy in Major League? Came from the California penal system. Ricky, was that his name? Yeah, Ricky, what's his name? Sheehan.
Who's our producer today?
But not that Ricky, the other Ricky in Major League.
It's Rick Vaughn.
Rick Vaughn. I mean, so you like the idea that the people you root for are good people, even though, I mean, people made Ray Lewis out to be a saint when he was in Baltimore, right? Because you don't want your favorite linebacker to be an axe murderer. I mean, even if he is, right? So, I mean, you know, Some teams are easier to watch than others, right? I mean, it's just because of the personalities on there, even though they might not be better. Just saying. We're in kind of a little bit of a rant. So what do you think happened to the market yesterday? Why did the NVIDIA thing spin like that, Kevin? When I talk these numbers, and when you talk to people, they kind of like, oh, you know, it's up, it's down. Kevin, $400 billion swing in a day. If you go back 10, 15 years, what do we have, three or four companies that were worth that, and we're swinging that in a day now? The amount of cash is just astronomical, isn't it? Their wealth?
Yeah, well, it looks like people are trying to figure out what things are really worth now.
Yeah, and I don't know really what's sort of all causing it.
Or they are figuring out what they're not worth.
Well, that's, it's old school, but, and that's the one of the most enjoyable things about being in the market, Kevin, is trying to value when a stock, you know, in its life of a company, in life, when a stock goes through various, I'll say, spurts. When you start out, and all of a sudden they catch fire. Maybe they don't right away, or maybe then when they do, all of a sudden everybody gets an idea that these guys are innovative, they're doing something, whatever it happens to be, whether it's railroad, TV, AI, you name it. All of a sudden, guys got a history to them, or not a history to them. There's a future to them, and it's really kind of hard to value. But they're valued as guys that will never look back. They're going to take over the world in 100 years. Now they're going to be the companies that are there, right? I mean, it's just the way the world works. It happens to be AI now. A while ago, it was a cloud, and then it was people invested in China. It was railroads. It was TV. You name it. And internet. And then all of a sudden, you know, they actually maybe catch some fire, get some customers, and people get an idea of just what their margins are going to be going forward. Because at the end of the day, on a real state investment, I'll call it, if it's a 12 flat, if you plunk $1 million into the place, you're going to want the place making $100,000 and sending you a check for 40 or something. That sort of thing all ends, right? You want somebody making 10% at least, depending on what the interest rates are. And by the way, you should share in some of that at some point. Now, it could be 10 years from now, it could be 15 years from now. People, or you got a Warren Buffett, I'm never giving you a dime, which is another, that's a real outlier, which I never did understand, but that's just, but his excuse is the double taxation of dividends, I think, but which does enter into the picture. But at some point here, you got to ask yourself, okay, when is NVIDIA going to start making all this money, and am I ever going to share? Now, if it's 10 years from now, because they're going to grow that fast, I can accept that. And then, but then if it's never, like Tesla, we're going to find a way to pay Musk $50 billion, and whether he's worth it or not, that's, you know, for them to decide. But the fact is, you're never getting anything. Which is okay, because the stock price, if it's going up. But if that happens, and this is the hardest discussion I have with clients, Kevin, especially clients that are in the stocks that have done very well, I said, you're never going to participate. It's not a decision you've made or I've made. It's a decision they've made. They're never going to send you a check. You're never going to get money from them. Never is a long time, but it appears that Tesla, that is one of their, and there's a lot of companies like that. I'm not just picking on them. That have said, we're never going to pay a dividend. Warren Buffett, obviously, is a shining example, or whatever kind of example. It's up to you, then, to take your profits yourself. That if you start out with 10,000 shares, and this thing's going up every year, which is hard to do, every year maybe you should take 500 shares off the table if it's going up, 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 and keep your investment somewhere. It's not like you're disrespecting the pay place. You're not doing that's what they're telling you have to do to take your share out. It's not a personal slam. It's not anything. It's not a slam at Musk. It's not a slam at Buffett. I mean, at some point, if I started with $1 million in Berkshire Hathaway, how many years ago?
If I can paraphrase what you're saying, is they're setting some rules down, and then you have to play that rules.
Yeah.
Those rules.
I mean,
if you want any cash flow out of it, then yes, you have to extract it. If you're smart, you'll extract some, because you can ride a wave only so long, and then the wave dissipates. So,
I mean, if you were smart enough to buy, God bless, Kevin, 1,000 shares of Berkshire Hathaway, I don't know what was around when I entered the business, but when the day it first started, to not leak out a share a year or something, why wouldn't you? I mean, so what if you're not sending negative vibes to the place, are you? You're just taking your share. We seem to have somewhat of a turn. We've had so many stocks that are down. The QQQs, which is the NASDAQ, down, pushing 5% in the last maybe not even, maybe we're over 5% in the last week or so, Kevin. Other than normal market, you know, every once in a while things sell off a little bit. Is there a tone change here? Is it, you know, I don't know. I was going to ask you if you listened to Petra the other day from Hull Trading.
Yeah, I thought she was great.
What do you think when they try to talk about
someone who's really young and has a lot of mastery over the her material?
Oh God, yeah. Well, did you see her list of
knows,
degrees? Good
knows
Lord,
her. You know her. You could argue. You know, you can argue with her rights and wrongs, but she was well prepared for discussion.
I just wonder what if you were doing it and were trying to incorporate some things outside the market, some things outside the technical analysis or fundamental analysis or things. And I'll tell you, when I'm done asking this question, the market is really struggling with some of these valuations. We did a couple of earnings plays this week. Now, in January, I'm not going into huge detail, but in January, God, Kevin, we were hot as can be. I mean, we're sitting there going, the only mistake we ever make is not making these things big enough. Now, in February, that has toned down quite a bit. We had one we did yesterday. The straddle, and I've mentioned this a bunch of times, was 550, which is the market's estimation of where the stock is going to move on earnings. And generally, the market is, it's the market. You know, it's all-knowing, or supposed to be, especially if you're a University of Chicago guy. Kevin, the thing moved $23 last night. 4.5 times straight. This is happening every day. I've never seen anything like this. It's like even the people in the market. I talked to somebody last night. It's one of these big firms that they do all the trading for the floor, and they should always be getting the edge because they're paying for the order flow and so forth. He goes, "We had a really good December because this February has been a disaster." I mean, what is going on? It seems to be befuddling everybody. The really good thing we have for our people is everybody, as the thing is flying down here, we've got puts for everybody. So, you know, if the market's losing X, we're losing, 20% X, but still, it's not winning. I mean, it's protected, and you can't, and we're doing fine compared to, we're doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing, but something is getting unglued here, and it's so easy to say, it's Washington, but, Washington's always doing something crazy, for whole years I've been here, so that's too easy of a, if you were, Patrick, what would you be seeing here is the inputs from outside the market that's causing all this. I was thinking about it this morning coming in. I can't think. I mean, I guess after the fact you can name them, but how would you like to model it before the fact like they're trying to do?
Well, I wouldn't, which is why I don't. that's your problem, not mine.
Well, they struggled, and all their returns are right on their site. They've had a rough February. I mean, I think everybody has in the business. That doesn't mean retail people have done well, but I mean, when you're, it is trying to predict not only what the news is going to be, but what news is actually going to move the market under. I don't know if I've ever seen it this difficult. Maybe during the Iraq War or something, but it's so easy to just, the market's down because people all of a sudden don't like Trump. I don't buy that at all. I mean, obviously stuff coming out of Washington is a factor. Do you think it's just the chaotic piece, or what is it? I mean, it's just the fact that you don't know what the next piece of news is going to be.
I know that chaotic. If there's changes going on at a very fast pace, and no doubt about that, and maybe that's a factor, but it's not hard to figure out a direction of where the administration is going, and in many ways. It's a good question only in that I would say, had the market adjusted to what was going on in the Biden administration, things like EV mandates and, all of those kinds of things that they had going on, and now they've all been undone. So, maybe it's just trying to figure out, okay, how do we shift off of one administration's agenda and on to the next, and this is why we really have to get back, and this has been a problem for quite a while, but why we have to get away from governing by executive order and start getting into the legislature governing, and like you and Lou were discussing yesterday, governing specifically, you know, that you have to, you don't have to take it down to the nth degree, but you have to be a lot more specific instead of just turning everything over to agencies to write law and to execute law. So, you know, I think we need to start seeing that, because we can't keep lurching back and forth like this.
Kevin, how, when you say a lot of the electric car mandates, I've not watched as many of the executive orders as you and Lou, but I know that that's the attempt right now, but has it actually happened? I mean, is Tesla still getting a check for carbon credits every month? Or is Ford?
Well, I don't know if they are, but Tesla would have actually benefited mightily from the Biden era, what they call the tailpipe emissions rule, that essentially was a backdoor way of forcing auto manufacturers to make more EVs. But Trump has rolled that back.
Well, what?
So that's an example, and you're seeing it. Because there's been a lot of EV-related economic development throughout the country. You know, people like Samsung putting up electronic EV battery plants, and they put the brakes on that stuff. The stuff that was going to be up and running this year, now they're saying nope, not maybe next year.
Well, I'm trying to get a.
You're seeing a lot of that kind of stuff, and I'm sure. You know, that's cascading through a lot of things. People are trying to figure out what's going to happen with tariffs. And, you know, is that going to shift any production? I mean, I wouldn't say it's going to shift any production to the U.S. immediately, but if it drags on for a while, it's going to shift production somewhere. If you tariff China substantially, we saw this last Trump administration, then, you know, 6 months in, people are starting to say, this is dragging on, this is not going fast, maybe we need to start sourcing in Vietnam, or maybe we need to start sourcing more out of Mexico or something like that. And you're starting to see a lot of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think there's your uncertainty right there is, you know, what's going to happen, at what time frame, does anybody have a guess? And I don't know what's going
to
happen.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, and I was trying to wrestle that out of Lou yesterday, I don't know the relationship between the laws, the bureaucratic programs that you guys are talking about, and that I don't really agree with either, the bureaucratic stuff and the executive orders. I don't know, you know, as smart as Lou and our attorneys are on the show, I'm not sure any of them can really explain that, Kevin. I don't know if anybody can. But
some of them are executive orders, but I'll give you an example that's not related, not necessarily related to the economy. You have the Department of Education. So this is not an executive order, but what they did in the Biden era was that they reinterpreted Title IX and they put in protections that were never in the law, in the Education Act, which, I think that goes back to the early 90s, if I remember. And they created all new Title IX protections for a new group of people, and it's all the alphabet soup stuff. So LGBTQ, more letters after that. And they put in protections in there that didn't exist for the first time, which forced schools to adjust. And that included things like, allowing biological men to play women's sports. Well, that was rolled back by executive order, but it was not implemented by executive order. It was implemented by the agency.
Okay, if you can, maybe we'll have to go to break here in a couple minutes, but in terms of the reason why I'm hung up on this, Kevin, is that not just because Musk got a lot of the money, but because if you went out and bought a car, you essentially wrote the electric people a check. I mean, Rivian, all the other places got them too. It's not just him.
All of them, even including GM and Ford.
Well, that's why Ford wanted more electric cars. They essentially paid themselves, right? But I guess what I'm trying to figure out here, I'm stumbling my way through this, I know this, is that passed by Congress and signed by the President to where it's there kind of no matter what. Was it the dream child of some some bureaucracy, or was it an executive order by Obama? And how do you in any one of those cases, how do you turn it around? I mean, I have to believe that today Ford is still passing the check over, and Musk is still getting some. I mean, I don't know that that didn't start by an executive order. I think that probably was a law, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was
it was a mandate from the EPA.
Boy, that's a lot of money to be able to, for an EPA to be shoving around.
Yeah, it sure is. And this is the point is, and the thing is, Tom, when you make the mandate like that, that requires enforcement too, and so there's a whole lot of expense to that. So one is it's not economically efficient because the market's not deciding what's going to happen, and then on top of it, it's expensive.
But I don't think that. I think that enforcement is relatively easy, Kevin. You don't have that many car companies. And you know what they do? They force it down. They force it down the chain. I'll bet they make Ford do their own audit on it.
Well, they probably do, but then they have to audit the audit.
Well, to a certain extent. But I mean, to give you an example, at PTI we're a $5,000 broker dealer, which doesn't mean it's not a really good firm. What means that a $5,000 broker dealer, you can't write a check out to PTI. You got to write it out to RBC or IB. Okay, so that's no big deal. But then there's people that are $100,000 BDs that do a lot of trading and stuff. We don't do that. So we're a $5,000 BD, so we have to have an audit that essentially proves that we always had the $5,000 all year. Okay, duh. The audit cost is $15,000. Now, the FINRA doesn't do that. They make us do it. Now, I'm sure they look at it. I mean, but how long does it take? Yeah, these guys... That we've signed off. They had the dough all year. Okay, fine. I mean, how long does that take? I mean, the amount of cost that drives into... I mean, if you went and bought a Ford F-150 a year ago, between the audit for doing it, if they have to do it internally, between the check they have to write somebody, either themselves or is it Rivian or Rivian? Who makes the really nice-looking pickups? Rivian? Is it? Who are those guys? RVN is there.
Yeah. I don't know.
But have you seen those on the road? Yeah, they're sharp-looking. Electronic pickups, they're made in Indiana, I think, Kevin. So every time I bought a pickup, what did that cost me? $5,000? Six? Four? Two? Why should I have to pay that? I mean, it comes down to you. It's not just them. You're the one paying it. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure, over a 10-year period, and depending on where you live and where you get your electricity from, I'm not sure the world is either better off energy-wise, or certainly in terms of dumping batteries in the landfills and so forth, I'm not sure that you gain anything. I mean, in some areas you do. I mean, if you got a windmill on your house, I guess you do. But if you're grabbing it from a natural gas plant 80 miles away, I don't think you're better off burning gas, aren't you? I mean, this is so wobbly, and everybody's so on one side or the other. People are so driven and been willing to argue about it. In fact, I think it varies with every case, doesn't it?
Yes, and so what should be the implications of that?
You sort of let the market do it. If it's worth it for somebody, if he has a source of electricity and to where it more than saves him the $10,000 new battery he's got to buy after 7 years or whatever the hell it is, let him buy an electric car. Why mess with the market if it becomes a better deal?
How's that for one question Socratic method, Tom?
Well,
damn,
yeah.
I'm so good. I don't have to.
Well, I mean, it, as much as I argue with our guys, I'm more to the free market than Hal is. The only difference between Hal and me is once you mess with it, you got to keep messing with it because you can't just do one thing. That's the only difference between our two.
Each time you mess with it and you have to keep messing with it, you screw it up worse.
Well, it's exactly right. But once you make Commonwealth Edison the monopolist, you can't just say, okay, whatever they charge. I mean, I don't think you can you? I mean, you may end up in the same place by the time they get done paying people off and stuff, But the fact is, you at least got to make an effort, don't you? At least most people think you do.
Well, you do, so that when you have industries like that where you say, well, it would be impractical to have them be anything other than a monopolist, maybe we should spend less time on these stupid agenda items that people have and more time on regulating monopolies, because otherwise they run amok and you get, you know, the mess that has been laid bare and has existed all along, but has been laid bare in Illinois and all of the Madigan stuff.
Well, that's right. And people, and it also comes back to when I was in grad school, Kevin, we will go to break here, nobody ever asked anybody to define profit. But now, the first thing I'd ask, when I was in an MBA class, when I was a professor, I'd say, okay, define profit. And they'll say, well, it's return to shareholders. Well, what if there aren't any shareholders? What do we give a crap about the shareholders? Well, what do you mean? They run the company. I'm not so sure about that. When was the last time their vote meant anything? Especially now that some companies had 40-50% in either ETFs, State Street Bank, or in mutual funds. Those people always vote for management. What if a guy, the market price of a senior CEO is $1 million and he's getting paid $8 million? What's the $7 million? Well, what do you mean? Well, is that profit that just not going to somebody else? I mean, there's all kinds of different ways we could open this can of worms up right now, wouldn't it? Well, look at nonprofits. You trying to tell me that Northwestern is a nonprofit place? Look at the money those people make. S&P futures up 11, Nasdaq futures down 1. We didn't even make it through the show here to the upside today. Well, that might turn around. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 11, Nasdaq futures down 4. The Nasdaq's the one that's been getting really clobbered the last few days. That Bitcoin's been going down, gold's been going down, everything's been going down. It's the price of Kevin's antique car collection has been going down, much to his dismay. Over in Europe, wait a minute, that's just an old car. Was that an antique, Kevin, or is that just an old car? Over in Europe, we have the, we'll get them in a second. The DAX down 97.4%, so not bad. FTSE up 24.3%. A CAC around down 32.4, so not any kind of harm we're getting over there at all. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 1,100 points, that's 3%. That's kind of, these guys have been all over the place. Hang Seng, same way, down 776, 3.3%. They were up 3.3% on Wednesday, back down to 22,941. Shanghai down 67, that's 2%. The headline is Asia Pacific markets fall as Trump confirms tariffs to proceed next week. Okay, I don't know if that's, it's kind of old news, but that's what the headline is. Yesterday, just as a way of review, Dow's down 193. That wasn't so bad. S&P down 94. That's a lot, 1.6%. NASDAQ down 530, 2.8%. That's a big move. That's a huge move. Bonds, Down 4 base points, 4.24. Dubun down 2 base points, 2.389. Japan down 1.37. Oil, which absolutely, well, now it actually ran up a little bit. It's up to 73.07. This is Brent. But it's down 97 cents. It was 69 the other day, so we are getting some volatility on oil. Natural gas down 4 cents, 3.89, as winter is abating a little bit. RBOB unchanged, 199. Gold, been getting clobbered. Down again today, 28.76, so no longer mid-2900s. Silver down 38 cents, 31.73. Copper down 5 cents, 4.56. Foreign exchange, the dollar is 104.06 against the euro, and it's 125.94 against the British pound, so the dollar's actually up a little bit. Crypto, these guys have been hammered as well. Down again today, Bitcoin down $2,900, 80,221. Kevin Rasky, after traffic news and sports, what do you think that has to do with the market here? It was 105 not that long ago, so that's a big move. Be right back. What do you guys for traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. 6:40 a.m. here in Chicago. 37 degrees right now with a high of 46. Cloudy and breezy with a shower today. Tonight will be becoming clear with a low of 32 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 61 degrees right now with a high of 89. Very warm with the temperature approaching the record of 92 set in 1986. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 57 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 9 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook, 22 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 21 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 18 minutes. Lastly, inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 21 minutes. Let's talk about sports. MLB preseason is here now. Yesterday, the Cubs and Angels tied with 4 runs each. Diamondbacks and Reds tied with 3 runs each. And the White Sox beat Guardians 4-2, which is very cool. Today we got Cubs and Rangers playing at 2:05 p.m. at the Surprise Stadium in Arizona. White Sox play the Angels at 2:10 p.m. in Arizona as well. Finally, Diamondbacks play the Royals at Salt River Fields in Arizona as well. NBA yesterday, the Suns lose to Pelicans 116-124. Then we have a rematch, Pelicans at Suns 8 p.m. and Toronto Raptors are here at Chicago at Bulls at 7 p.m. Lastly, NHL yesterday, Golden Knights beat Blackhawks. Back over to you guys.
Kevin, I watched one of the games the other night with Luka Doncic and L.A., they look a lot better. I know they lost a good guy, but I think he's better than the guy they lost. What do you think?
Well, I don't think Doncic and his style of play conflict with LeBron as much as Davis has did.
Yeah, LeBron seems perfectly happy playing with him, doesn't he?
Yeah, because he's got a guy who's going to feed him the ball a lot. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I got lots of criticisms of LeBron, but he is a guy that, you know, that he needs someone to get him the ball rather than having, you know, requiring him to get the ball and spread it around. He's, you know, that's his game. And Luka Doncic is going to score. He's going to score plenty, and that's not an issue, but he is a really good passer when he's on, and I think that's something to keep in mind always.
For those who have never played basketball at any level, one of the hardest things to do is to work, which people don't do anymore that much in the NBA, that's why Kevin, I don't like it that much, but is to work your way. Everybody has sort of a favorite shot, favorite move, favorite something, even a schlump like me. And if you're constantly working your tail off to get open in a spot that's good for you and you never get the ball, it gets old real fast. Same way if you're the only guy in the team playing defense, it gets old real fast. So basketball, in a lot of ways, attitude-wise, it really is could be one of the most ultimate team games, don't you think, Kevin? I mean, if everybody's not playing defense, nobody's playing. It's weird, you know, it's in that way, wouldn't you say?
I would say, I think everything to a large extent is, the team play is critical. Team play is, you know, there is a certain amount of choreography. Lou likes to talk about that. How his dad always said is that the offensive line was choreography, just like a dance line. So, yeah, I think that's important. Hey, I do, you know, thinking back to our original discussion about Ricky Vaughn and, you know, remember his nickname?
I will. Boy, I'm brain dead.
Wild Thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the song, yeah.
So I think we need to adapt. I think we need to call our guy Ricky. We've got to start calling him Wild Thing.
He could be that. He's not
okay with that, Ricky?
He didn't come from the penal colony, though, you know. Penal Institute, not the colony. It sounds like something in New Zealand or someplace. Ricky, would you like to be Wild Thing?
Yeah, I love it, man. Wild Thing.
Okay. God. Oh, well, there you go.
Officially our own Wild Thing.
Yeah. So what do you think, Kevin, when we were talking, you know, before the break, I was asking you questions regarding, you know, the market valuation and stock valuations, and when all of a sudden a stock like eBay was, you know, you didn't want to short eBay forever, for years, and Meg Whitman took so much money out of the place. She told everybody she was doing it, so it was very above board. And all of a sudden, one day, everybody goes, it's just another retailer. They're no innovator anymore. They're just a retailer. And all of a sudden, one day, it was priced as a retailer, and they still are a company. They're still making money. People still use them. But now, there you are, just another. But the turn, and when people take you from the wildly innovative to just steady growth to all of a sudden, they're just, you know, they're making tape or something. It's fascinating when you see that turn, because you can never really predict it, or at least I can't. Boy, if you could, you'd be a wealthy person. And you wonder what some of these things, like, you know, we saw it with the cloud. I mean, I would say that, I hate to say anything nice. You were the first person that constantly said, this is getting very, very competitive. Everybody's got off-site, you know, capability now. Not everybody, but there's all kinds of competitors. This is becoming, you know, something that everybody has. You don't have to be the one or two places that claim they have it. Everybody seems to have it. You're one of the first people that said that. Now, all of a sudden, you know, cloud is good for a company, but it's not. You don't hear it anymore, right? It's just,
well,
just
you,
another product.
You don't product. Hear it because it's commodity. So you don't hear it because it's commodity, but that doesn't mean it isn't there because, you know, a lot of the stuff. In fact, you know, I had made a mental note to talk to you a little bit about analytics because, you know, you guys were talking earlier in the week. I think it might have been with Hal. And you were talking about analytics, and you really didn't get into it much. But it is, analytics is, how do I want to say this? It's all the data that you know about. So, you know, you think of your own company, and, you know, there's a lot of structured data to it, things that you know, customer files, and so on. But this is where, you know, a lot of that, it's not that you couldn't do this yourself, but where a lot of cloud stuff comes into play now is that the sheer quantity of data that exists in the world that we cast off, like, every minute of every day, that is used in analytics functions to do things like demand planning would be a perfect example. That if you're going to spot trends in the market where your products are, think of trying to extract data off of social media. How unstructured is that?
Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
But you do, and there are engines, you know, data engines for parsing that, and there are, you know, our programs in the world for doing it and trying to gather all that stuff and formulate it into some kind of a plan, and that's a big data case. Whereas you also have analytics to do things like inventory optimization, in your own place with much more structured data. And then you might be using analytics to try to create models for how to lay out my warehouse more efficiently or my production lines more efficiently using what's called digital twins, where you make, you know, where you make essentially a simulated version of your place, and you can start running simulations about what if I move this here, what if I move that there, you know, those kinds of things. And that's part of it as well. And so that's the whole analytics function. And now when you go back and say, well, how much storage would I have to buy to be able to do that? So that's where your cloud function stays put, because at that point, you know, you do have the almost limitless ability to gather and store data there.
Why do you think Google, trumpeting the stock of any at all, but why is the Google PE so much less than some of these other places, when it seems to me they have, you know, me being the neophyte, Well, it seems to me they would have more access to people's information than anybody. They're just, I mean, I think their PE is way less than like Meta and some of these other places, aren't they? I mean, it's like in the 2025 range, and yet that's for somebody who's supposedly an innovator. That's not that high. I mean, it's almost like a real company. It's almost like a middle of the road kind of company these days.
Yeah, Tom, I can only speculate that. Other than to say that things like search data, that's much more structured than the data that Meta gets its hands on every day, and that probably again, if Meta's got any kind of role in standardizing some of that non-standard data, that's going to put them in good stead for what they have to sell.
Well, I've got Microsoft at 33.
Totally intrusive. It's totally intrusive. So we aren't even talking about the public policy and privacy implications of all of that.
Well, I'm saying Google's,
and I don't mean to brush that off as.
Oh, I'm with you. I just would think
I think it's one of the important issues of our day, and nobody discusses it.
I would agree. Were you you weren't in? I think it was, it might have been last Friday because I was talking to Carl about it. Anyway, just to finish my thought here, like Meta's PE is 30, Microsoft's 33, and Google's like 22. I don't know if I would have ranked them if I would have guessed that. I would have sort of thought might have been almost the other way around, but it's not.
Yeah, what else is Meta doing?
I don't know. They've been straight up. They've probably been the biggest performer in that area since the administration change. I'm not so sure why, but I wish I knew why. But they've been really powerful. They've been really strong. Tesla's got his ass kicked. Tesla's is under 280 now. Today it's 279.75. I mean, that thing was. I'll grab a chart here real quick. They were charts, basic chart. That's what we need, Kevin. Just a new chart. I've got these guys that. God's sake, they were 463 on 12/16. Another 279. That's an ouch.
It is. I'm not overly surprised though, because we're lifting mandates that we're forcing people towards electronic vehicles. They've got to have the same phenomenon that I mentioned with EV battery plants. That if we're slowing down the mandates, then we're going to slow down production along with it.
But this is interesting, Kevin. It's actually right back almost to the number it was before the election. Wow. Good thing I looked at it.
Maybe the run-up was just, Musk's relationship with Trump, and now, people are looking at it and saying, well, it's not that profitable for him.
Well, yes, it certainly doesn't seem to be profitable for Tesla, at least so far. But, anyway... But you wonder about how this valuation's going. That's why it drives. I mean, I was probably more than the listeners. I was fascinated listening to Petra the other day, because if you actually were trying to put 10 or 15 variables in there to not only judge the market, which I think they do more than individual stocks, because they pretty much stick with the S&P as the thing they grade themselves to. But boy, I don't know how you'd. You could say politics affects the market. Okay, now how do you define politics? Okay, I mean, what do you throw in there for a tariff increase? Well, it's not. It's got to be an integer, right? There's going to be a tariff or there isn't. So I don't know how do you put something in there that we used to call that integer programming. How do you put the likelihood of a asteroid hitting New York? It's either going to or it's not, right? I mean, how does it enter the formula at all mathematically? I'd love to see the nuts and bolts of that someday, Kevin. I probably couldn't understand it anymore. But
well, we used to be heavy on probabilistic models, and now we just we're better on scenarios. But if Carl is fully espressoed by now, he should probably jump into this, because in the chat he had some thoughts on the topic. So I would invite him. You said he definitely needs more another espresso hit to be able to chime in, but
would you love to be there someday when he just woke up and just start peppering him with questions to see how you could get him reeling without his caffeine?
I don't know. You don't get me without caffeine.
Well, there you go. I would be the drive-in with the traffic gets me fired up. I don't really need the caffeine. If I wasn't driving, but that's enough to get you on your toes, a drive on Chicago Expressway before the show. Just saying. But anyway, if Carl's around, please pile in. But some of these, I mean, when you start valuing companies and you're managing people's money and you see the move and just a difference in perception in one day of, you know, $400 billion, I've never seen anything like this, Kevin. This is crazy. You know, one day, the Qs, which now have an expiration every night, one day the thing was trading like 501, this is at maybe 1 o'clock, and the 500s were like 20 cents. Yesterday, the ones a dollar away were like 20 minutes to go were $2. I mean, it's really, even if you have a feeling, some days you can get the price kind of where it's somewhat reasonable. The next day, everybody's got the same feeling. Yesterday, I think the straddle on the close at like 130 was almost $3. That's unconscionable. There's been days when it's been 80 cents. I mean, the VIX is up here to 21. I mean, right now you can say even, you know, it comes down to what I do for a living, Kevin, is 2 months ago when I constantly was talking to people, guys, you got if you've been riding this market all this length of time, the you know, it might be a good idea either to protect yourself a little bit, maybe take a little bit off the table. That went absolutely on deaf ears everywhere. I mean, nobody, why it's going up every day? What the hell's the matter with you? Why we haven't had this discussion? Let's talk about something else. Okay, fine. Well, now all of a sudden we've seen this correction, and people that were down, some people were down 5, 8, 10% depending on your stock, and now the phenomenon here is, it's not like car insurance, it's like the fire insurance with the fire in the next canyon. Now the cost of protection is way higher than it was 6, 8 weeks ago when I was talking about it like that. Because the VIX was down very low, the cost to insure your stuff or to protect yourself, insure is probably not a word you want to use, but protect yourself, was relatively cheap. Well, now it's not. I mean, now it's not at all. So now if you the question is, if you pile on the door, well, I won't say for any brokerage firm, because most people just jam you in the same hole as everybody else, but a firm like ours, with which there's probably only a few that actually model your portfolio to what you want to do, I mean, it's very difficult to do. But now, if you're a firm like ours, now you've had the QQQs have dropped from like the 30s, say, I get the exact number, and you say, okay, well, gee, now maybe we should think about protecting ourselves, all right? Well, for God's sake, if you go out to April 17th and you want to buy the at-the-money puts, they're like $16. Where a month ago, they might have been $8. Well, hell, that's a difference. Now you got to get there and go, do I really think it's going to be down another $16? It's a whole different question. The oddest part is the cheapest in all the years I've been doing this. And Kevin, maybe you can give me the cycle. At the top of the market, 2007, 2000, you name it, the cheapest price to insure yourself or protect yourself is always when the market's at market tops. People are more comfortable at the higher price than they are now. And I mean, it's just as simple in the QQQs, which is the it's the NASDAQ. If you look at this right now today, if you look at the new chart, I'm sorry about all this chart stuff I'm giving you. All right, the thing was $539 on the 18th of February. Now it's $500. All right, so it's down, you know, whatever that is, 40 points. That's 7-8%. The cost of insurance is way higher now than it was when it was $539. Now you would think that it wouldn't be that way, and why was it so cheap at $539? Because as long as it's going up every day, people are so happy. How could it ever go down? Now that it's going down, oh man, what's happening? I'll pay anything for the insurance. The mindset is crazy. There's a reason why I try and talk to people into protecting themselves when nobody else wants protection. It's cheaper. Duh. I mean. And I don't, it's hard to get that message across, Kevin, because in no other industry, I mean, your car insurance, if you want to pay for a year, It's twice 6 months, right? It's not the way it is with options. Different world. And I'm sorry to go off on you like that, but
that's all right. You had fun doing it.
Well, I just wonder why. But the message in 2007 when we were at record highs, why would I ever want to protect myself? It goes up every day. Well, okay, that's the way that is. So what do you make of this? Why are our girls lost two in a row?
To follow up too. You know, we should probably block off some time to talk about things like analytics and how that all fits into the scheme of it, because I struggle to come up with the 30-second version of it, and I think it is worth some time for people to understand I would encourage I was serious when I said I think it is one of the major issues of our lifetime, and that it really is something that needs attention. I'm not suggesting that government's going to go fix anything, because they'll probably bleep it up, but what I am suggesting is that we need to understand how much data we're casting off, and even if it's just at a very, very personal level, stupid things like how much data does anybody need to find you? If you're worried about identity theft, as an example, what does anybody need to be able to find you? Well, it's pretty much if they got your zip code and your birth date, including the year, they can probably get a whole lot of information that even not having your name in the first place. Because there aren't very many people that were born on the same day as you sitting in your zip code. What are you going to go put on Facebook about, when you're talking about where you live and when your birthday is, and you have your birthday public so that hundreds of people who barely know you can wish you a happy birthday?
Kevin, how do you let's put that on maybe next Friday. We'll see what's going on Wednesday. But I asked you this a while ago. Somehow I got something in email. I was going to say the mail from somebody. It might have been in the mail, but somebody was giving me some story about they were trying to sell me something. They had stuff from me going back when they knew at least three addresses ago. They knew back to my first car, but they knew like St. John Fisher Grammar School, Marist High School. Who the hell has that information? I almost can't remember it. I mean, who's got grammar school information from people?
What I was talking about for analytics. So, yeah, it's, some of it's relevant, some of it's not. To use it effectively in a business use case, you have to sort through all that crap and discard what's not relevant. But, yeah, there is a whole lot. So, whatever we think of privacy, and then you get people like Klaus Schwab saying, well, people are just going to have to get used to the amount of information that's out there, and if you have nothing to hide, it won't be a problem. Oh, I always love that argument.
Oh, yeah. All the stuff about your automobiles, that has come from the Secretary of State. Who else has that?
Well, yeah, of course. And some of it is obtained legally, and some of it because it's public information, and some of it isn't obtained illegally.
Do they have no after 20 years, you throw it out stuff? Evidently not. We're talking about stuff when I was 16. I mean, that's a long time ago.
You know what? Your data, your texts, all of that kind of stuff, the only things that could possibly live longer and last longer without going away are cockroaches and beef jerky.
Okay. What about rats?
That's a close call.
Oh, good. Do we have Carl?
Oh, you do indeed.
How are you, bud? What do you make of all this? When it gets to the analytics, you guys are.
Let
me ask a question. Just because you, my question is that, and this is one for maybe the three of us someday. The person who dug up all that crap on me and sent it to me, how do they make any money doing it? I didn't buy anything.
Chief, you already asked the question. I'd be happy to answer it.
Okay.
So the reason Meta has a much higher PE than Google is that Google sells advertising for the most part, okay, along with cloud services and all sorts of stuff, right? But their primary thing that they do, and you know, on the part of my site where I don't talk about anything that they object to, which by the way is a new thing. They just started that when the COVID stuff started. Right? I mean, short of things that were ridiculously over the line, but you know, go kill this guy.
Yeah.
They didn't used to care what the topic of conversation was. And that makes perfect sense, because when you are collecting analytics, as you've been talking about, the entire point of targeted advertising is that if you, from your profile on me, discover that I like to shoot guns, as an example, and you think that's accurate, you're not sure it's accurate, but you think it's accurate, that I like to go to the range.
Right? You've mentioned once in a while you have some and you've collected some, so I guess well, that means
or,
you...
Or you from my location information, discover that I'm in the parking lot of the local gun range. Okay?
I was thinking more of you is, you know, puts a six-hour smoker on the grill and starts shooting in your backyard for 6 hours while it's smoking away.
Well, maybe I do that, too.
You've got to shoot the food that's going to go in the smoker.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Or you discover that I'm hanging around in a bunch of places where there tend to be deer, right? And in December, when the season's open. Right. So, I mean, you come up with this, and hey, what's this guy doing sitting in the middle of a field freezing his balls off at 4 o'clock in the morning, probably waiting for the sun to come up to shoot the buck that's over there. So you develop this profile of who I am and what I like to do. And then you have a bunch of people that would like to buy advertising. And the problem with advertising in general... which I had to deal with when I was running my internet company because this stuff didn't exist yet, is if I buy a radio spot for drive time in Chicago, which we did, by the way,
yep.
What percentage of the population that has their radio on wants to buy internet service? Okay. That is my maximum impact. Now, I may not be able to sell to all of them because, of course, there's competition, right? So, same thing. If you're the Chevy dealer, there's a Ford dealer. But if only one person in 10 might want to buy internet service, I've wasted 90% of my ad spend. It's gone because those people are never going to buy my stuff. Doesn't matter what the price is. They're not customers.
Yes.
So the value of this information in the advertising context is that now if I've got a bunch of articles up and they all pertain to particular social things, whatever's going on, or political things or business things, okay, this company looks like crap, I think they're going bankrupt, this company's going to shoot the moon, et cetera, or, the employment report and things like this. The people who are potential advertisers can bid against those specific things and say, when Denninger puts up an article on the employment report, I, as a stockbroker, have a better than average chance that the person who's reading that article is going to want to have a trading account.
Correct.
Or another trading account. Therefore, my hit rate as an advertiser goes up. All right. Now, that is why targeted advertising has value. That's where the value comes from. That's where all the value comes from. All right. The problem is, from a standpoint of all the social sites, that's not what their actual business is. That's what you think their actual business is. That's what they tell you their business is. That's not their actual business. And the reason is this: all of them, Meta, Instagram, X, it doesn't matter who's running them anymore. And Google got into this during the pandemic, all right? And it's deeply disturbing, but there's more money to be made doing this than the other. And that is, our actual job is to shape consensus. If you think about what, how this works, this is psychological conditioning. It ought to be illegal because it is entirely undisclosed. You can't consent to it because they obviously are not going to tell you exactly what they're doing. If they did, you would never consent. All right. So social media is largely responsible for the destruction of any kind of reasonable discourse and interaction between people in the United States and, in fact, on a worldwide basis today, because their entire point is to get you to come back and spend more time on the site. And there are two ways to do this. One is to hit your dopamine, which is your pleasure center. All right. Thus, hey, that's a cute picture of a cat. That's pleasurable. All right. The second is to hit your adrenaline side. I'm infuriated. You bastard Trump. Or you bastard Michael Moore, or you bastard Rachel Maddow, or you bastard Biden. So the algorithms are all tuned and designed to hit both of those things.
As Dr. J would say, you're not paying for information, you're paying for affirmation.
Not even affirmation.
You're paying for emotion.
You're paying because you're paying in... at least 50% of it, you're paying to create rage. Okay? Now, this is a serious, serious problem. You take a look at what this has done to, for example, the dating scene between men and women, or, if you're gay, well, between men and men, or between women and women, whatever. There is always somebody who has more money than you, who is cuter than you, who has a bigger six-pack, or that's always true.
Is a pot belly just a big six pack?
Well, that depends. maybe, quite possibly, right? I mean, Chief, you probably got it because you drank a bunch of six packs.
Well, that's very possible, yeah.
that's probably how it happened, right? But here's the thing. I don't care, unless you're Elon and you literally can pay 20 women to have children for you, okay?
Yeah, it's,
and play Genghis Khan. By consent instead of by rape, all right? I mean, if you think about it, that's a rather interesting twist of psyche, right?
Well, when that guy croaks, what's his estate gonna look like?
Well, I'm sure that all of these women that have done this have been very well compensated. And by the way, that generates a great deal of rage for all the women who didn't get selected.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Right? Because, hey, what's $1 billion between friends, right? So the thing is, if you think about how these sites work, if I'm seeing somebody and then I have this hypersexualized competitive thing shoved in my face all the time, I now have an outside pressure that is wildly beyond going to the grocery store and seeing the women walking around the grocery store. That are, and some of them get very aggressive, attempting to attack my relationship. And they're doing it directly because they're on the app, okay? Now, will your relationship survive that? Well, it very well might. However, it is a destabilizing force that is deliberately curated and caused. It's not an accident. And anybody who thinks it is has rocks in their head. This is the entire... I was involved in very early versions of this data collection, mining, and marketing stuff. And the only reason that it was not worth doing... Everyone talks about computer processing capability. It's not the processing capability. What made this possible in the modern world is that storage has gotten so cheap.
Yeah.
It is not the processing capacity. It is the storage. This is, by the way, at the core of what went wrong internally, originally, within federal government data systems. It used to be, before there was MagTape, there were punch cards. And then there was MagTape. And then there were disks.
All right, okay? Back up just a hair.
Let's get the scale of that, too. Because a disk that was like about the size of maybe a too high filing cabinet, would cost maybe $10,000 and hold 10 megabytes?
Oh.
Something like that?
Oh, Kevin, it was much worse than that. The disk was the size of a washing machine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've seen those
and,
too, but yeah.
Well, and it held 10 or 20 megabytes. And then the first somewhat rational setup was the RL01, which was a deck piece.
Mm-hmm.
That was about 8 inches, 8 or 10 inches high. It took a cartridge. The cartridge held 5 megabytes. Okay. However, these things were, and you could take one cartridge out, put another one in. These things were extraordinarily sensitive. They had shock sensors on the cartridges, because if you managed to drop one from as little as an inch off a desk,
it was done.
It was destroyed, even if it wasn't in the drive at the time.
So you had major businesses, though, who were saying disk space is so expensive, storage is so expensive, that all my files will be kept on tape, and I will only load them to disk when I'm using them, and then I will unload them back to tape when I'm done, because you had to manage that expense.
You didn't even load them to disk. So this was the nature. I mean, the first money I ever made programming a computer didn't even work that way. It was a GL and a payroll program, and you picked up the last week's data or the last entry's data by hand from the ledger card. So you picked up the last line, it performed the calculations and printed another line on the paper, and then you put that back in the file. Why? Because the storage was so expensive that small and medium-sized businesses couldn't afford to buy it. All right? So you had archival storage on tape, but tapes are slow because you have to read all the way through from one end to the other. All right? You can't randomly access things on them. So as this all changed, when I was running MCS, there was a period of time where we were buying 8 gigabyte SCSI hard drives. Now you needed the card that interfaced to these things, and it could only talk to 8 of them because that was the capacity.
Mm-hmm.
The card was $1,000 and the drives were $1,000 a piece. And they were 8 gigabytes. All right. Now I have 32 gigabytes of memory in my desktop machine right now. So this is, I mean,
and you can go buy a thumb drive that's, you know, terabytes and what, spend $40, $30?
Oh, I have a 128 gig thumb drive that's in my car that has my entire music collection.
All right, guys, let's back up.
So the important part of that is what Chief's talking about is that
memory is so cheap now that that's a big enabler for all of us.
Okay, I get it, but let's get back right, a little so further. All right, Google is great. They now have the ability of what you guys are talking about to mass all kinds of stuff, but is the bottom line that the information about me that I give to Google not as valuable as the stuff people are giving Meta at Facebook? Is that?
Oh, no. The bottom line is that Google does not have a social media app, and therefore they cannot drive consensus. All they can do is censor people. So they can turn around and say to me, as a person who allows their advertising on my site and gets a small piece of the pie from doing so, okay, just like the radio station gets most of it. In the case of a site like my own, I get a tiny little chunk. They get the rest. But they can say to me, we don't want you talking about COVID vaccines. And if you do it, we will blackball your site.
Right, I'm trying to get back to the advertising component where
Chief, the point is this. That's where Google's influence ends.
I'm trying to, in my mind, because that's what I'm not on Facebook because I'd have to be all over my regulators and stuff. But if I go to Google and say I'm looking for a 75-gallon hot water heater, which I did,
right.
And now all of a sudden it's popping up on my other pages, that's, for an advertising standpoint, that to me is fairly valuable. What does Facebook have that is the equivalent of that?
They do that, but Facebook also has your location information if you allow them to have it. It has your microphone on if you allow them to have it. And so now you and I are sitting at the bar and we say, hey, you know, I think I want to go to the gun range tomorrow. And all of a sudden I start seeing ads for that. Okay. So the other thing, though, that comes along with this is that Facebook can essentially point me at things that will enrage me, therefore make me come back. Now think about the value of this to a government or to some other entity that wants to change how you look at things.
Well, that's pretty valuable.
That's worth a lot of money.
But how susceptible, Ms. Gavin, don't go, I want you to answer this. But
that's what they did about that COVID vaccines and the whole the quarantines and all of that crap.
By the way, it's also what they have been doing with elections here in the United States for the last three cycles. Okay, it is, they drive the orange man bad thing, or orange man good in the case of X now, because of course Elon owns it. And if you violate their idea of what they can control, then you will be expelled. They will either censor your speech or throw you out. And what's even worse, Chief, you know, you guys put your show up on X once in a while, right? The links to your show.
Yeah.
All right. I until I gave up on them because Elon, I used GFY, and this was deemed violent speech, even though he said it several times, and I refused to take it down. So now I am considered persona non grata on X as a result of this. But the reason I won't take it down and consent to his censorship is because I ran the analytics on this. Supposedly, I have over 10,000 people that follow me on X. I would assume that if those accounts are real, if they're not sex robots or whatever.
9,900 were government employees watching.
Well, are they?
I don't know. Yeah.
Are they humans and are they real? And by the way, what's he doing with the content I post? Because all the way back before he owned it, every one of my articles got posted there just the article. All right. Now, 10,000 people, you would think that if half of them use the app a day and they are following me, so they would see this, that say half of those, so 2,500 a day, would click that link and go read the article. I mean, that's a reasonable set of assumptions, right?
Yeah.
Okay, guess what? This last month, over the entire month, only 1,400 inbound links came into my site from Twitter.
Well, just because people follow you doesn't mean they're actually going to read the damn thing.
Oh, no. They never see it.
Okay.
Because the algorithm buries it, and the reason it buries it is because it takes the eyeballs off his site.
Well, I've been sneaking over to YouTube more than I used to.
Here's the really bad news. I blackballed people posting links to X. So if you try to do it, it gets treated as profanity and you get dot, 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 dot instead of the name.
Okay.
Well, and you know why? Because the outbound links that I was providing to his company were orders of magnitude higher than what I was getting back from him. And that's because he algorithmically chose to do that. Now, Facebook does the same thing, and I know this because I used to have a Facebook account. It's the reason I took all the link buttons, all the like buttons and everything off my site, is because the value proposition is exactly one way. Now, we used to have these fights when I ran an internet company on peering. If you and I are going to exchange traffic without charging each other, as long as the value flows approximately equally in both directions, neither of us wants to cut the other guy an invoice because accounting for it is harder than just doing it. Okay?
Yep.
Now,
a little barter every now and then is a good thing.
Well, but there isn't a net value exchange. Okay? There's the net value is the same in both directions. So we're not really selling each other anything. So we agree to peer.
Wait a minute. If you're a farmer and you give some guy a dozen eggs for a gallon of milk, sometimes it's counted, sometimes it's not.
Well, but they're not the same, but those are not the same product. In this case, it is traffic in each direction. Okay, it's the same thing. So you could look at this as the net, you know, $1 minus 95 cents is 5 cents.
right? There's 5 cents worth of value exchange that actually happened. If that number is small enough, it is more expensive for me to account for it and bill you than it is for me to just say, eh, you know, we'll just the data flows both ways, nobody gets invoiced. All right. This is how the internet was originally built. But every now and then, and this goes back to the Netflix discussions that I had during the time that that was starting up, you have somebody that says, hey, guess what? I'm going to suck up a huge amount of value from you that you have to pay for, because you have to provision that equipment, those lines and everything else, but I'm not giving anything back to you. And Netflix was doing this. This was the whole thing with net neutrality and Obama, and one of the reasons I was on it, like white on rice, because essentially what Netflix was saying is, you get to pay for our infrastructure, you don't get any money out of it. We get the subscription fees. All right, now at that point, if there's that kind of a lopsided exchange, what ends up happening?
What you're talking about is everybody increases their internet capacity so they can download all these movies. Netflix makes out like a bandit, and everybody else is sitting there paying higher cable fee.
Everybody else pays the bill.
Right.
Right. So, and by the way, what the worst news is the guy who doesn't want to watch Netflix gets the bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, because if I'm an ISP and I'm serving a bunch of people, even if 90% of my customers want to watch Netflix, 10% don't. And the guy who doesn't gets charged so you can.
Again, I'm wandering in where you guys are, one toe. But if you get the thing from your cable company or your fiber company, they may say you need this amount of, I'm going to go from 5 to 10 or whatever the hell it is. Well, if everybody else gets on Netflix and is downloading a movie, my 10 is now really 4, right?
Or 2.
So now I'm sitting there going, I need to go even faster, so now I'm going to pay up for the 25.
Well, except that you won't get the 25.
Well, yeah, so you're but at least now I'm probably going to get 10. No,
actually, Chief, you won't.
That's really?
That's the worst problem, is that the bottleneck isn't in your last mile. It's in the cable company's infrastructure. And so you'll pay up for the 25, you won't get anything.
So the guy from Netflix is doing, it's called an economic externality.
That's right. And so this is the thing. When in the world of peering, if I identify that as a provider, I'm going to turn around and say, I'm not peering with you. You're going to have to buy transport from me. All right?
So Obama when they say neutral, they didn't want anybody to be able to charge Netflix and saying you're taking too big of a load for everybody.
Well, Obama turned around and said, we're not going to allow you to make that business decision by law. All right. Now, the thing is this. If I am exchanging traffic with you and you're exchanging traffic with me and we're both getting value out of that transaction, then I have no reason to bill you and you have no reason to bill me.
Where's the cockroach in the room if you start letting cable companies charge people coming in the other way? I think that would bring up a lot of abuses as well, though, wouldn't it?
The only reason it does is because the cable company has a monopoly on the last mile.
That's what I mean. So
all right. So this is where the problem came from, you know, that I saw coming back when I was running my firm, because when I was doing this, we had 100 competitors in a local market. If I tried to screw someone like that, I wouldn't be in business for a week. So, but when the cable company is the only way to get the signal into your house, that's a different game, all right? And so, yeah, there's a regulatory difference that's there, but the way you went about it was entirely wrong, and Reed Hastings loved it. He loved every second of it. Everybody else got effed. And by the way, if you haven't noticed, your internet service from the cable company has gone up in price by a factor of about 4 in the last 10 years. Gee, I wonder why that happened. So this is the thing is, though, is that in the social media space and in the online place space, what they're selling for real is shaping opinion, and the people they're selling it to are people you're not being told about. Now, we now know, for example, because of this USAID stuff that's come out, that Reuters was being paid during the COVID time frame, and in fact, all the way up until when Biden left office, Reuters was being paid to push your dopamine and your adrenaline buttons with propaganda. It was actually on the line
Isn't every advertising is propaganda?
But wait a minute. Reuters is not, that's not advertising. That's news.
Well, there, Kevin and I were talking earlier, what defined profit.
Where's the line between those two?
Yeah, well, right. I'm saying, Kevin and I were talking earlier about when I was a ute, you never even questioned what the word profit made. Everybody knew what it meant, what it was. What is it?
Well, so here's part of the, now you've got the editor at the Washington Post is leaving in protest because, Jeff Bezos has all of a sudden become MAGA and da 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 da. Oh, but nobody had any problem with it when it was all Biden News Network, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Explain to me, what is CNBC or Fox? Now, I would say news, boy, talking about showing my age, was the big broadcasting companies gave, let me keep it simple, the 6 to 7 o'clock hour said that's news. Now, granted, we still were competing because we'd rather have people watching Walter Cronkite than the guy who was on the other station. But the fact is it was given off, and they basically rattled off the news for an hour and went back to the programming. But now, CNBC or Fox... that's not new. Well, let's put it this way. The fact that the tape's running on the bottom line, I guess that's news.
That's news.
And the CPI comes out and they cover it, that's news. But all the rest of the stuff where they bring the chairman of O'Neill and O'Neill on there and Kevin does nothing but trumpet his company, that's not news.
This is the problem is that we have taken when I lived in Chicago, I had a Wall Street Journal subscription. The paper was on my desk every morning when I came into the office, okay? And I also read both the Trib and the Sun-Times. Why? Because while there was a slant between those two, it wasn't in the front section, right? Not back in the opinion pages. Of course, those are opinion pages. They're labeled that way. But... in the front section, there was coverage of one thing that was not in the other, okay? Because the beat guy who was out there doing whatever, he can't be in two places at once. And so, this event happened here, and the Trib guy got there first, or whatever have you, right? And that was the way it is. It isn't that way anymore. So Detroit used to have the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press. The Detroit News goes away, the Free Press still existed, and...
Did Detroit ever have an afternoon paper or just two morning papers?
No, I think the News actually had an afternoon edition, but I don't know.
Because the people who wrote Herd and this Tribune and the Sun-Times were the Daily News, or an evening paper.
Well, that's right. But so we went, we went through these things.
By the way,
what
are you catching this PC? Is it 0.3 versus 0.3?
That's what I got. So
the world's most useless number because you don't get any of the details.
Yeah, I was going to say you want to talk about knob twisting.
Yeah.
All right, but this is so. Then when my mother was not doing so great, I'm up there. She's still no apps for her. I got her a flip phone because I was worried she was going to fall and wouldn't be able to get to the one on the wall.
The jitterbug. All right.
No, I actually found one that worked on T-Mobile that was just a flip, and the nice thing about it was nice and small, and it ran for about 2 weeks on a charge, so she didn't have to worry about
charging it. Well, the jitterbug is one like that, but all the buttons are bigger and all the other stuff.
She was perfectly capable of using it regularly. Yeah, but that way she could have it in her, in her jacket pocket or in her, in her pants pocket or wherever she fell, she could, she could call 911, right? So I'm like, hey, Mom, you're getting older. Let's. But while I'm up there, she still had a Free Press subscription, and I'm reading this stuff, and it read like something off of Facebook or off of CNN, even on the front page. And I'm like, what the hell happened?
Well, Carl, there is no city desk.
I know.
And I
doesn't exist anymore.
I gotta one of these days. I'm gonna have to text Manny Weber. I haven't talked to him in a while. Kevin, do you remember the name of the guy who was the... is Kevin still with us? Do you remember the name of the dude that was the homicide reporter we had on a few times?
Kevin dropped out the call.
Okay. I normally try and prepare Carl, but this was I'll blame it on Maddie. I said to the guy, "So you're still with the Tribune?" He goes, "Chief, I'm not with the Tribune." I go,
"There is no Tribune."
No, he goes, if I hear in a police ban that there's a murder someplace, mm-hmm. I get my ass in my car at 3 a.m. and I go out there and I don't have a camera crew. I said, but I'll do the report and I'll try and essentially sell the story to somebody. Sometimes they buy it, sometimes they don't. I go,
it's all freelance.
He says, but is there anybody there for the Tribune? He goes, they don't have anybody.
No, there's no, the city of Essex is gone.
Yeah.
But this is what's happened. I mean, some of it is organic, right? I mean, you know, everybody's walking around with a camera in their pocket, takes the photographer side of it out of the game, right, for the most part, because there's 400 pictures that somebody, you know, took because they whipped out their iPhone or their Android or whatever. So, I mean, that's, in some ways that's good, in some ways that's bad, because somebody who has a real camera, I happen to be one of the people that enjoys doing this kind of stuff from a creative perspective, it tells a different story than the guy with a phone. All right. I mean, it just, you know, photographs can tell a story if you know how to do it.
You're perking my brain up more than usual, which caused me to interrupt more than I want to. But did you see who the hell took the picture of that Southwest flight dodging the guy on the ground in Midway? Did you see that?
Yeah, that was just, this is the thing about, though, everybody has a
camera, no, this one, right? Came up from behind the Southwest jet. It had to be from the plane behind him.
No, there are people... Chief, there are people who camp out near airfields. They're not looking for.
What I'm talking about is, it was an actual film. It was above the jet. It had to be the jet behind him with some kind of camera.
Or it was from a building with a long lens near Midway.
No, it was way high up because he was up behind.
I saw the video, but this is, you know. I mean, you would think that there's no way anybody in the cockpit of an airliner is sitting there with their phone pointed out the window, right? Well, you'd be wrong about that, because that one that crashed in Toronto, that shot was very clearly taken from the cockpit of a plane that was was holding short, waiting to take that runway.
Does a regular commercial jet have a camera in front of the plane that's going all the time?
I don't know if they do now.
Because that would be the only way. I'm confusing everybody. There was a plane that was supposed to hold short of the runway in Midway.
And it didn't.
And to listen to the pilot back and forth, I listened to the entire thing. The guy's an idiot. What was he doing? Was he playing checkers? He wasn't even paying attention to the guy.
Well, I wonder if obviously he mentally was not there, right?
So the bottom line is he didn't hold short of the runway. There's a Southwest jet. It's landing. All of a sudden, it's clear. It's a sunny day. All of a sudden, the guy spots the dude coming across the thing, and you see the engines pile up, and the guy gets up and gets out of the way. It was an amazingly good job by the pilot. Well, this picture looked like the plane right behind him must have had a nice camera on the front. It looked like something you'd see in a movie. I mean, you see the guy going down. All of a sudden, you can see this plane coming across, and you see this thing, and off he went. It was a great job by the pilot, which would maybe... Maybe lets people think that we do need pilots.
this is part of the, you know, this whole debate. You have all these people talking about, you know, AI taking over the world or whatever have you. Well, you know what? AI works great when everything works the way it's supposed to. All right? And you can identify the patterns and, you know, whatever have you. The problem is externalities. It's the reason that I absolutely refuse to believe that we're ever going to have what Elon talks about as true full self-driving anytime in the near future. And it is not the things that you can predict from modeling. It's the things you can't. Like, the plane's on final, he's about to land, and somebody else pulls out in front of it, all right? Despite the fact that he was told not to.
Yeah.
Right? And the thing is, if he does not correct, and he's got about a second and a half to react correctly to
He was on it so quick, wasn't he?
Well, and if he doesn't, it's going to be, you know, eight ball in the side pocket, right?
Well, he's going to make the decision to land above the guy, meaning he wouldn't have enough to stop.
You can't. He would have gone off the end of the
runway. Or crashed into the guy. I don't know what decision I would have made on that.
Well, that one's... So the thing is that part of the problem is also there's a spool time on those engines, because when you, when you firewall the throttles, you don't get the power instantly because the compressor has to spin up. Okay,
it's so there's 5 seconds, three. No, it's probably 2 seconds. Three.
Well, yeah, but you're doing 130.
Yeah, that's a long way.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you go a long way before the power comes up. But that's, I mean, I had so many years ago, in the late 1980s and early 90s, I used to fly back and forth between Chicago out of O'Hare and Atlanta at Hartsfield. And it was a couple times a week because I was doing some contract stuff for a shop that was north of Atlanta, Norcross. And so I'm back and forth. And we had one of those. I'm sitting there in the seat. We're on final. Flaps are down. I could see the stripes on the runway go under the wing, right? And all of a sudden, I'm back in the seat and the plane's going around. And pilot, after he gets stabilized and everything else, he comes on the intercom and he says, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be a few more minutes before we land. There was another plane in the middle of the runway. We thought it'd be a good idea not to continue.
I guess a kind of a weirdo question is this: everybody has seen these films on Midway.
Yeah.
Everybody, this has been the big talk in Chicago, and there's all kinds of talk in Chicago for 3 days now. And yet, I was landing. We flew out to a board meeting, and I was actually sitting next to the vice chairman up in first class. Now, he, of course, had all the miles that got me up there. I didn't have enough miles, but I'm sitting up in first class, which is nice. And he's got the window seat, which is nice of me to give him since he got me my spot. And we're going into Reagan, not the one where the crash was, the one the guy was supposed to go originally, the big long runway, and then they moved him around to the other one. We were on the big long one. And all of a sudden, we're down there, we're going all of a sudden, and up and around he goes. And the vice chairman, I got him, Time Asher, happened to be a pilot, like you. Well, I don't know if he was a pilot, a private pilot. And he's looking out the window, and all of a sudden the captain comes in, and he goes, yeah, well, it was a little bit of a go-around just to be safe, blah, blah, blah. And Time he goes, get to be safe, just be safe, my ass. We were on top of that guy.
Right.
Now, the question is, that wasn't headline news in Washington for a month.
We were
bit as close to that guy as this dude was with the guy crossing the runway.
Oh, Chief, I was sitting right over the wing, and when we went around and coming into Hartsfield, I saw the plane go under ours. Okay, I saw us pass over the top of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
If he had continued to attempt to land, we would have hit him. There's no maybe on that. So, I mean, that's the thing is, though, is that those things are not really... historically, they haven't been all that uncommon. But this is again, goes to, the old adage in the news business is if it bleeds, it leads, right? That's always been true.
Yeah.
Not a new thing. But the difference today is that now I can slant this. Well, that happened because Trump fired 1,500 people from the FAA.
Or it happened because the person in the tower was some gay guy they hired for some reason.
He's a gay guy and he's not really good. Right. I mean, this is the thing is that now which way that gets slanted depends on who's doing the so-called storytelling. Right. But realize that social media, and the reason it's all over everything, is that it exists for the purpose of either giving you dopamine hits or adrenaline hits.
Why don't I guess this is a question about people, Carolyn. I know you can't answer, but take a stab at it. I won't say addicted. I go to YouTube now because I was looking at it on how to adjust the headlights on my truck and a bunch of kind of learning stuff. I go on there, and there's all kinds of really good stuff. And I sent you guys all the stuff now. The guy who created those to nice music, all the different countries in the world, the size of their GDP going back 100 years, and you can see the growth of different countries. I mean, some of the stuff's pretty fascinating to look at. Well, now it seems like in the last several weeks, there's been an invasion on YouTube, which maybe means because I clicked on one of them like an idiot.
You did.
But you'll see the stuff, Trump nearly implodes in Oval Office or something, and then once in a while you get clicked into the darn thing like an idiot, and you go, and all of a sudden, no, he didn't. they showed this thing, or the next one is Biden broke down 3 weeks before he quit or something, and you go in there, and the guy's at a regular meeting. I mean, none of the stuff even How big of a dummy do you have to be to fall for this crap, other than the headline?
Well, but see, that's not the point, okay? Here's the whole reason that they do this. And this is why the sites surface that to you. That's the grab, right? And then you either read the article or you watch the video or whatever it is, and it's the opposite. So now you were suckered, right? If you think about it for 2 seconds, you were suckered.
Was it because in the middle of it, the ad comes on and you got to hit skip the ad? Is it the ad that's dragging you?
No. The point is, you got suckered. Well, what does being suckered trigger in you? Triggers rage, doesn't it?
Well, but I'm not going to listen to them anymore. I don't think that's the response they're looking for. But
no. Not you won't listen to that. But the adrenaline hit is what he's after, because it will drag you back to the site for something else, and they will use that information to surface something else they think that will enrage you.
Well, you know, think of it as though with me, they've got me by the short hairs right now, and I'll tell you why. Other than maybe you, nobody is more interested in how things work, because I used to do that before I became a trader. I used to, like, you know, fix my own cars and stuff, but that ship has sailed. Yesterday, I saw the most fascinating thing about how a clutch works. I never really knew. I mean, I knew what they did.
Right.
But then the day before, I'm watching this thing about building this bridge. I was all over it. I mean, they've got me. but it's not the politics.
No. But the thing is that's how this... that's how these sites all exist.
But that doesn't make me bad, does it? I want to learn how bridges.
No, it makes you human.
Yeah, I mean, but they got me. I mean, I can't.
But I'm saying it makes you human. But see, now, you know, my thing is, like, I can take a look at something. You know, I want to know how a particular thing goes together. Well, it used to be that I had to go buy a climbers or whatever, you know, on a car, right? And it might be wrong, by the way. But now I can take a look at, you know, okay, I'll search it on YouTube, and there's 15 different videos going across whatever. I can look at more than one opinion, and I didn't pay for any of it. The same thing is true, like, you know, it used to be. The rabbit hole got deep when I started getting into the whole thing about getting the carbs, which ended up removing the seed oils from my diet by accident. I didn't realize that the seed oils were 90% of the problem. I do now because I have the data from my Garmin, but that didn't exist more than a couple of years ago. You couldn't obtain that unless you had lab equipment, which nobody did. Now, it's obvious. So essentially, the health improvements were almost accidental, because I... you know, okay, the carbs were bad, but the seed oils were worse, were a much larger contributor, but they got removed accidentally when I got the carbs out.
God, didn't I know my grandmother, when she used olive oil, used to use the real old-time pure corn oil. Is that...
garbage.
Wasn't as good? I mean, I didn't think you had to process corn oil as much as you did, like, grapeseed or something.
No, absolutely none of those should be consumed at all in any amount. And I, you know, I was just up skiing over this last week. I went into a pub that I haven't been up in this particular place for a few years. Before, the last time I was there was before I had this information on my wrist, all right? I went in there and I had the same kinds of things that I used to eat and one beer. Went back to the hotel, went to bed, and I got hammered overnight. They are using seed oils in the kitchen. I don't know exactly.
Everybody does.
Well, guess what? I don't want to eat them. So I attempt to choose things that they would not cook in them.
Okay? All right, so when you say what's not a seed oil, olive oil, avocado
oil? You can't cook in olive oil because it doesn't tolerate high heat. So you're talking about butter, tallow, lard. But
yeah, what about avocado oil?
Avocado is okay if it's real, if it's pure. It's expensive, so nobody uses it in a restaurant. Expensive. Right. So the thing is, I mean, the reasonable cost ones at scale in a restaurant would be butter, tallow, or lard.
Do you use a butter ghee?
Ghee is just clarified butter.
Right. Hey, while we're arguing about these, what's going on, and once in a while I go back to the, wherever you're at, you can get a massive argument regarding what's going on in Washington and laying all these people out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of stunned, but then once in a while, Carl, even though we've been fighting about it on the show pretty heavy, I try and go back to the the actual numbers that are there, which, of course, you never want to let the facts get in the way of a good story. I get that.
Oh, part. Never, right.
So I went back here all the way to 1993 on the amount of federal employees.
Right.
And the administration that dropped the most federal employees...
Clinton.
...was Clinton, by far.
Right. And, yep, it's Clinton.
And just to give you an example, when Clinton took office, there were 3,092,000 federal employees. And he and Gore, and they actually did it, my style points, they did it kind of the right way. They involved some of the unions, they got rid of some of the duplication, they did it through Congress, they had a procedure to it without castigating the people that they fired as being useless assholes, whatever you want to call them, like they're sort of doing now, in my opinion. Anyway, just on the numbers, I'll try and stand on numbers here, Carl. They got down to 2,753, which essentially is, 340,000 people less when Clinton left office. Now, when Bush left, after 8 years, he picked up essentially 50,000 of them back, all right? Now, Obama's 8 years, he picked up another 30,000 of them back, all right? So we're creeping back up here. Trump's first term, he picked up 75,000. All right, so we're back up to 2,886. Biden's one term, he picked up another 140,000. So we're actually still 70,000 less than when Clinton took office. And the actual low month, I don't know why this, Carl, if you can remember, the low month was 2728 in May 2014, which must have been Obama, right? And then it kind of picked out, so Obama actually, he lost some people for a while, and then he picked them back up. I don't know.
Right.
I'm not sure
right.
what the, historically, can you figure out? I mean, we're talking about 100,000 people out of 2.8 million. So on a percentage basis, we're not talking like a lot. But somewhere between when Obama took over, he was 2786, somehow got down to 2728, and then kicked up to 2813. There's more detailed stuff that defines this in terms of military and other. But still, actually, if you look at Bush versus Obama, Bush picked up, or Bush, Burton, Clinton, he picked up more people outside the military than he did in the military. So
yeah,
but I'm saying these numbers are, you can draw some conclusions from, but they're not that big.
No, but Chief, here's the basic problem with all of this is that the inefficiencies and the insanity are not. They're not something that just happened under Biden's administration, okay? And I'll just give you an example. The last time I had an actual reason to set foot in a Social Security office was in Fort Walton when I lived down there in Florida. All right, they've got an office if you need to go in there and talk to somebody about something, right? Well, at the time, I needed an actual physical card. Now I mean, I know what my Social Security number is, but it is.
What'd you do? Lose your card? I still have mine.
It's been a cold day in hell since I've given a crap about having physical possession of the card.
Well, okay.
So I this was not too long after I moved down to Florida.
So what happens when they card your ass?
They don't for that. It's not identification. It said right on the face. Well, it doesn't anymore.
I know.
But the original ones say right on their face, not for identification.
Well, there's no picture. Okay? There's no nothing on her. How could it be for identification?
Well, that's right. So, I mean, why would I need a physical card? I know what the number is, for crying out loud. I've had it my entire working life. I got, when I got my first job, I got it.
Remember when they used to put them on your driver's license?
Yeah, well, that got taken off because of the privacy problems and the identity theft issues that come from people stealing the driver's license databases from the states. So, anyway, I go into this office. There were two women sitting at the terminals actually processing people that came in for whatever it is that they needed, right? There had to be 30 more people in that office that were sitting there playing with themselves.
You clearly are the saloon that I went to for Friday night fish fries in South Bend. They had the big thing. Everybody in this world except you doesn't work hard enough and is overpaid.
Well, I'm just saying, I didn't
see... That must have been your poster.
Well, yep, quite possibly. But I didn't see any of the other people in that office so much as lift a finger key a single thing on a computer terminal, get up and pull a file out of a cat, you know, nothing. And I sat there for 45 minutes waiting for one of these two people who was actually doing some work, okay, to take care of what was a very routine request, which is, you know, who are you? Prove it. All right, it's my driver's license, right? All right, prove it. You need us to send you a duplicate card. It literally took me close to an hour. All right, and two out of the maybe 20 people that were in that building were actually doing something that was in some way related to processing. The whole reason the office existed was somebody needs to come in there and get something done. Everybody else was, I don't know what the hell they were doing, but I know what they weren't doing, which was taking care of the half dozen people that were waiting in line. So, and I've seen the same thing. I mean, you know, we had the same situation in Florida with the DMV offices. My God, they were horrible. Same deal. You got two chicks that are working the actual terminals and processing driver's license renewals and tags. And at everybody else, I have no clue what the H they're
Carol,
doing.
It's somewhat unfair to, you go to the post office, you see a couple of people actually carrying a few people slumping along like they're,
yeah,
like the old gas station attendants used to be. But, you know, when I was a Ute, and I told this before, I got the job as a Chicago public school janitor, right? My stepfather, you know, he didn't usually did stuff like that, but he did. And so I get in there, and Carol, I was supposed to be 21, I was 19. Guy said, make sure you put down your 21. I go, okay. She goes, how old are you? Cranley, 21. I was a big guy, so okay, fine, as long as you're 21. So I put down whatever I did the math in my head, what my date of birth would have had to have been.
Right. And,
so, but I mean, I'd go to one of these schools. Carl, I was a guy who was 19 years old and played ball 5 days a week. I was doing a classroom a day. I mean, in the summertime, for those who aren't interested in this, kids aren't in school. Well, these are these old buildings, wood floors and everything. Well, you have to clean the whole thing from top to bottom and strip all the stuff, and you had to varnish the floors or seal the floors. They used to call it varnish, then it became seal. Well, you had to pull all the desks in the hallway.
Right.
You know, but I'm 19. And what's the song? My steps were quick and light. I mean, I took all the chairs out of like seven classrooms in the first day. The next day, I had this big monster. You ever see those huge rotating scrubbers?
I thought you were going to tell me about the drum sander, because I've used one of those.
But on the bottom, you either had the polisher or underneath it, you put this big hunk of stainless steel on the thing.
Yeah.
Well, if you didn't start that in the soapy water, you get flipped out of the third floor window. I was doing two rooms like this a day, and then I was averaging a classroom a day. And I just wanted to get it done. Because then when I was done, nobody cared. It was done, and all I could do, I could go play basketball all morning in the gym. They didn't care. But the point is, when I was doing stuff in the gym playing basketball, if you walked in, you'd say, what's this idiot doing playing basketball? But if I was, you know, if I was 60 years old, I'm not doing a classroom a day, and why should I for $29 a day, whatever I was making?
Well,
I mean, there's a pace here. We're not talking about a person who has a job in the Social Security office is not making 100 grand a year. I mean,
okay, but now wait a minute, Chief. Now there's a problem with this, because when you get organizational labor into these environments, then and that's a large part of what's happened, is that you actually got that work done in 2 hours. The other guy over here takes eight. Don't work so fast. You're making him look bad. Well, guess what? I'm paying the bill, so how come we don't hire the guys that could do it in two? And the guys who can't do it in two, that are taking eight, they get laid off.
Well,
and before you say that's unfair, let me point something out. Elon bought X. X was a private company that was run for the purpose of making a profit.
Don't tell me he fired half the people and there's no change there. You're about the fourth person that says that, and I don't buy it at all.
He fired 80% of the people.
Okay, and everything's... And
it didn't collapse.
You don't know how... you're right, it didn't collapse. But how many... you don't know if he's hired any back?
Well, no, I don't.
Okay,
But what I do know is that he fired a huge percentage of the staff. Chief, the prediction when he did that was that the site would be down in a day and it wouldn't come back up until he hired
everybody who is on the right is doing their level best to justify not only what this guy is doing and how he's doing it. They're doing their level best.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. Don't put me in this bucket. What I am saying, however, and what I pointed out both in an article and on the show a few days ago, is that in 2015, okay, so 10 years back, the Senate Budget Committee identified that 8% of federal spending at the time, okay, at the time, the federal government, according to the MTS, spent about $4 trillion. So it's 4.2, I think, was the actual number. They found $380 billion that was spent against expired programs. Now, an expired program has a legal amount of spending of zero.
Why? This is a general question. This is not an accusation.
By the way, that 8% paid salaries.
Why does everybody... I mean, we talk about the person in the Social Security office not looking like they're hustling. What about the person who's at the high-end office that answers 58 personal emails a day? What's the difference?
Well, nothing, and they should go too.
Okay, but the idea, though, you're not... Actually, I got a good story. You'll love this, Carl. I think you get a kick out of some of the stuff I tell you. I go to this other school, right? And this is, I was going there for a couple weeks. So the first thing we were going to do is police the area. And I used you know what that
means? Yes, yes.
What is police the area?
Oh, we're gonna go find all the stuff that needs to go where it isn't.
No, we're going to go outside, and we're going to go down the sidewalk and through the parking
lot. That's what I'm saying.
Pick
up all the trash.
We got our brooms, and we got our stuff.
Right.
So there's four dudes and me, right? And we all got our brooms and so forth. So... You know, I first start out, I'm 19 years old. I'm going a little faster, and I say, everybody behind me, I slow up. And they slow up a little more, and I slow up again. Finally, one guy goes, Tom, you ever work for the WPA?
Yeah.
I go, no, I just kind of learned to go to the same speed in some situations as everybody else.
Well, Chief, I mean, you know, you take a look at all the people that hated on the TVA when it was going on, okay? But the reality of the situation is that then Helene shows up, we get a really, really ridiculous, out of normal, but not unprecedented rainstorm, right? And the places where the TVA had put dams in, there was much less damage. Yeah. Not zero, by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not trying to glad hand the fact that there are parts of Tennessee that got screwed pretty good. But But here's my point. In North Carolina... In Asheville, they threw the TVA out when they were going to dam the French Broad River.
Really?
They had the money allocated.
Well, that's
the
one that had the
government.
big flood, right? Oh, yeah.
By the way, the whole reason that the TVA went in there was that they had been flooded three times in the last 100 years, badly, okay, by exactly the same sort of thing that happened this time. And the people in Asheville and Bucumbi County told them to go pound sand, started suing everybody. They threw up enough roadblocks that the TVA said, we're going to spend 10 times as much money as we have allocated, and we're not going to get the dams built.
Well,
okay.
Because you're talking about people, and I think before we get all fired up on fire everybody, do this, or hire everybody, which would you rather have? There's not everybody... Remember the Star Trek, the movie where they end up heading out, and they had the room of the young cadets on the ship, and Kirk asked Spock, how are they going to react? He goes, each
according to their ability.
Each according to their ability. And what's if you're going to gather, would you rather have 100 people out putting horse trails in the forest preserve, some people slow, some people probably can't hardly even move, or would you rather have a homeless camp? Same amount of money it costs you.
Well. Now wait a minute. Now that's you're assuming that if we had just 10 guys who could actually hump a shovel or a loader or whatever, right, doing the horse trail, that we don't have anything productive to do with the rest of them, and I reject that out of hand.
No, I'm saying some people are just going to be stronger, some people are going to be faster.
Well, I understand that, but the thing about capitalism, and boy, if you want an example of this, all you got to do is look at Canada when it comes to healthcare. Okay, healthcare in Canada is quote unquote free, and yet
it's included.
God help you if you get something serious going on that isn't standard, okay, that actually requires somebody to think as opposed to, you know, here's a pill. Something like that happens there, you're probably going to die before you get it taken care of.
Well, let's talk about this on Tuesday, because the
thing about America is that if we actually stop that crap in the healthcare system here, because it has creeped into there to a ridiculous degree, we'd have much better results.
And
it'd be cheaper.
I have some serious opinions on that, and so do you, and it'll be a great discussion on Tuesday or Friday. It might be more than a half hour. But when I was in Canada, seeing a couple of clients, I'm in this hotel, and I sit down, and there's this guy next to me, started talking. And his mom had some medical issues, and he said, and he knew a lot about the U.S. stuff. And this is a while ago. He said it's virtually identical to the HMO system here, you can't go to the if you have to go to somebody else who's got to recommend, the specialist got to recommend. But you and I are used to Cadillac plans. We go where we want. Most people in this country don't get to do that.
Right. Unless you have a lot of money, in which case.
But he says up there, if your kid, you know, wrecks kind of a knee in high school football,
right,
he doesn't get to go to the front of the line from two guys that got hurt at work just because it's a rich school with you know, and you need him back playing halfback rather than go back to work. But here, I've had some health issues, thankfully they seem to be behind me. I went to the best places there are. I was able to do that and knew people. I don't think somebody from Effingham, Illinois gets to do that. They're probably more like the Canadian system.
Yeah. Well, you know, we seriously need to, and this is where Trump, you know, all the noise making about this and that and the other thing with Doge and all this, if he does not go after the medical system, not Medicare, Medicaid, but the system, he's going to fail.
I don't want to leave on this note, but for some reason, the Democrats have attempted to do something with the system on a few occasions. In my opinion, kind of swung and missed, but at least do something. Republicans.
What the Democrats have tried to do is add more overhead.
I never said they did a good job. You'll never get me to say that because they didn't attack the cost side. Republicans have done nothing but bitch about what the Democrats have done.
No argument.
I'd be really surprised, but very happy, if Trump turns that around.
Right, that needs to get changed. Everybody needs to get changed now.
By the way, these numbers we rattled off on these people, it's like 120,000 a person. So if you can get rid of 300,000 like Clinton and Gore did, it's real money. Right. But it's also nowhere near the same as doing any kind of a fix to the medical community. Right.
This is the thing is that, you know, Musk says, well, you know, we're going to find $1 trillion. You find $1 trillion, you don't actually fix it. If you fix the medical problem, you solve all of it.
Right.
The problem is you gore everyone's ox.
Right. Well, why don't we have a good weekend? What do you think? The market is going to get pulled out again today, or we used to have a decent day?
I don't know. My guess is just, you know, being a chartist on this one, right? Because, you know, it's kind of where it is. And looking at the data, what I see is seriously softening internal indicators, both within the market and within employment. And that portends some very bad things. So, this is, of course, why the VIX is up, right? And all of a sudden, protection isn't so cheap.
Well, I think a problem, as much as it shouldn't be a problem, but there's enough wealth in this Bitcoin now that if it keeps going down, it's going to cause a problem.
It's only got another 83,000 to go to zero, so you know that's how far.
But I'm saying I read $2 trillion in there, so we're down what, 20%.
Yeah, and I don't see anything that's going to turn that around. The hype that was driven on this when Trump was coming into office, that he was going to create a digital currency that the U.S. was going to use, and that was really where that last, you know, that last doubling came from.
All right, bud, have a nice weekend. Talk to you on Tuesday. S&P futures up 11, NASDAQ futures up 8, so we kind of like the PCE as not being bad when we're there, because ask anybody for the detail, there is none. Back on Monday.
Yeah, there's that problem.
Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
the end of it, and that's all, folks.